Okay, so we'll look at our authority. Authority. So a bit of context first, and then we'll get to play. Authority was an enormous issue in Elizabethan life and Renaissance times across Europe, but particularly in England. Because the preceding couple of hundred years in English and British politics have been very, very turbulent. As those of you who do history will know, this was a time where the rule of law wasn't established as it is now. An independent police force, a judicial system, was in its infancy. And so for stability, what people needed more than anything else was authority. And actually, in a sense, it was better to have a stable authority figure who was brutal than to have a constant upheaval of authority figures. The work of Machiavelli, we talked about the other day, and we talked about previously, was particularly pertinent to that, relevant to that. Because what Machiavelli said, as you know, is that it's better for authority to be stable than it is for it to be moral. And a Machiavellian leader will do anything they need to do to stay in power, even if it's not particularly moral. And actually that view had a good deal of sympathy, because, as I said, stability depended on strong authority. So the Machiavellian kind of leadership and authority, M-A-C-H-I-E-B-E-L-L-I, I think. I look it up, because I'm doing that off the top of my head, but I think that's right. We said that Machiavelli, kind of philosophy was that stability in authority and leadership was more important than morality. And that a good leader will do anything they need to stay in power. So that's one view of leadership and authority at the time. Of course, the other views of leadership we're well aware of now, particularly linked into the divine right of kings. I'm sure I've said, but I'll say again, James first, the new king, was fascinated, or fascinated is the wrong word, was a big supporter of the idea of the divine right of kings, particularly as his taking over of the English crown was by no means certain. People could easily call into question the legitimacy of him as king, in that he wasn't the eldest son of Elizabeth. And so the idea for James that God had appointed him, and the people saw him as God's appointment as king, you could understand a very attractive one. And he wrote a number of papers during his time as king on the divine right of kings and the importance of the divine right of kings. So that was another really important kind of contextual idea when it comes to leadership and authority. So the question is, in King Lear, what sort of leadership do you see? And if this came up as an essay question, I would divide it into the different sorts of leadership that you see in King Lear. So if you follow that through, different sorts of leadership we see the leadership of King Lear at the start. And we've looked at that at lunchtime as utterly authoritarian. All of those imperative statements and commands.
Say, finish my book.
So King Lear at the start, utterly authoritarian. What he says goes. We talked about this earlier when we were watching the film earlier on in the term, but it's one of the few occasions in language when the saying of something is actually as good as the doing of it. We talked about, I likened it to the wedding, the priest's pronouncement of wedding, someone's marriage, is one of the only times today that we see that the same thing. So when the priest says, I now declare you man and wife, that's the same, that's the words are the same as doing it. The words and the action are one. Most of the time in life, the words are either a statement of what I have done or what I plan to do. But for King Lear, what he said was law. So if he said it, it happened. If he said it, it was already done. So when he says right at the start, I should express our darker purpose, divide into three our kingdom. In the saying of it, that's what happened. There was no question once it was said that it wouldn't happen. It was just how they would divide the kingdom that was the issue. In the Ian McKellen version of it that we saw on the screen, I don't know whether you noticed, but they had someone in the corner kind of taking minutes, scribing down, I think we're doing it on the typewriter, but scribing down everything that the king said, because the king's words were law, and if the king said it, it was now law. And so what the man in the corner of that room was doing, it was actually writing down law as it was made. So here's a ruler whose word is law, utterly authoritarian, and who has the God's power, and I say the God's in the pagan sense, but also God's power in the Christian sense, on his at his whim. So when he calls down, a bit later on in scene one, he calls down the God's curses on Cordelia, he has the right and authority to do that. And again, I think they show that really well in the version that we saw, because as he lifts up his hands to pray, you notice they all fell to the floor. And although that's one director's take on that, you can talk about that in an essay as a critical response to the play. So you can talk about in the Ian McKellen or in the Royal Shakespeare Company's version of the play, when the king lifts his arms, the other characters fall to the floor to emphasise his power and the fact that he speaks with the god's power. And that's you can use that as a critic and it will get you an AO3 mark. Because any director who puts on a play, the King Lear becomes a critic of it, because they make decisions about what's important, what's not, and how things should be represented. It's the same with the one we go and see at the cinema. We'll be able to use that in the same way.
Is
that
the same company?
So it's the RSC, but it's a different director and a different team, different producer and a different designer as well, so I'm imagining it's going to look very different. I don't know much about it. What we'll see is a live feed of what they're them acting in theatre in London. You know, mistakes and all. So, it doesn't matter too much. For shorthand, you know, the RSC or an RSC production probably is the better determinant, and rather than the. I'll find out, I can't remember now, but I'll look up the director's name, because the director is normally the kind of key to identifying it. So that's one view of authority, and for the first part of my essay, that's what I would be looking at, and you can centre that all around that opening scene of the play. And my second look at authority, you would want to focus on those characters who are given authority, but who use it in a very Machiavellian way. So Goneril, Regan, Edmund. Goneril and Regan and Edmund use their authority in a very Machiavellian way. That is, they do anything they need to do to get and then to keep power and authority. And as we've discussed in another theme, in a sense, what they show is great wisdom in that. Certainly they're very canny and they're very very clever in taking and gaining keeping power. What they use that power for is often cruel and divisive. They use that power to belittle and their father and eventually send us what they think is his death. They use that power to pluck out Gloucester's eyes. What Shakespeare seems to suggest by the end of the play is that that form of authority, that Machiavellian, do whatever it takes, form of authority, eventually ends up turning in on itself. When Albany turns on Goneril eventually, he calls herself and her sister Regan monsters of the deep. He calls them monsters of the deep. And I can't remember the exact quote, we'll look at it. But it's the monsters of the deep that turn and eat each other. And that style of authority and power, by the end of the play, is shown to be self-defeating. Goneril kills Regan, Regan kills Goneril. Edmund is defeated and the three of them end up kind of defeating each other, really, don't they? So as appealing as that Machiavellian authority seems to be, Shakespeare's play seems to suggest that it's in the end it's self-seeking, self-serving, and will destroy itself. If you think about this in the context, as I said earlier, James will watch this play. And there seems to be a really strong message running through it about what kind of authority is desired and is fruitful. And there seems to be a warning, it would seem to me at least, to a young king, young in terms of he hasn't been on the throne very long, about how he uses his power and authority, and a warning against Machiavellian authority. But also a warning against, and I should have said this earlier on in my first point, I'm sorry, I'm going to mess up your notes. The first point does talk about authority that was authoritarian, word was law, but of course in King Lear it was authority that gave its authority its power away, that didn't take its responsibilities seriously. King Lear is an authoritarian leader, but one who wants the rights of authority without the responsibilities of authority. Should have said that before we moved on, sorry. So if you look at it that way, then there are two warnings here to a new king. Don't use your authority, don't enjoy the rights of your authority without taking the responsibilities seriously. Don't give away power, be careful about who you give power to. And don't be Machiavellian in your use of power, because in the end that will destroy you and everybody else as well. So then we're looking for a third model of authority in the play. Any thoughts? The lack of authority. I mean, a lack of authority leads to chaos in the play often. And that certainly would work as a something to look at. You might want to look at the lessons that Lear learns about authority. And Lear, yeah, now Lear is given his authority back for about a minute and a half, 2 minutes of stage time at the end. But the lessons that he's learned along the way make him a very, very different leader for that short time than he is at the start. He's a very humble leader who realises his flaws and his failings. And he's learned great lessons about the responsibility of a king to look after not only himself but his whole kingdom, from the poorest to the richest. Shh, you're very quiet, please. So some of the things he learned on the heath, you know, I've taken too little care of such as these, poor Tom. He talks about justice and how justice is favours the rich because they can afford to defend themselves and the poor can't. And so you could argue that what Shakespeare is arguing is that authority is best when it takes its responsibilities as seriously as its rights. And when it does what King Lear says, which is to shake down the superflux, which sounds like a kind of science fiction type of image. Superflux is simply the trappings of wealth and royalty. So the servants, the food, the houses, the banquets, the fur, lined robes, everything else. What Lear says is that I should have, and other kings should after me, shake down the superflux. In other words, we shouldn't keep that level of right and wealth for ourselves. It should be distributed amongst the kingdom. And so what Shakespeare might be saying to James is that's the kind of king you need to be. A king who's humble, who knows his responsibilities as well as his rights, and who ensures the safety and the well-being of every member of his kingdom. Because that's your responsibility as king. And you could argue that he's saying if you want to play with your God's king, if you want to claim divine right of kings, then you understand. You need to understand that with that comes responsibility to be God. To be graceful and merciful and kind and generous. And we'll leave that there.